Hey, everybody, it's Devin.
And your mom, Kate.
You're not my mom.
Well, maybe not your mom, but all of your mom.
Welcome to Med Crimes.
Already got some pumpkins out, some colored things. I got my bat mug, rocking my bat mug.
I have a few fake florals out to give some of the color.
Same.
I'm holding off on the tote. I wanted to get past my son's birthday, which was this past weekend.
Yeah.
I feel like in the next week or two, my tote will be coming out.
Yep.
That
same.
Has the pumpkins in it, but I do yes. have a few florals popping some color.
Absolutely.
Thank you, everyone, for bearing with us on our late October episode.
Yas.
This time it was my fault.
Well, no one's fault. Like, life just kind of happens sometimes. And like, you guys are super understanding and we really appreciate you.
The messages saying, like, you girls do you, it's so fantastic.
It really
like,
is.
Kate and I are so dedicated, but we also know if we push ourselves too hard, then it won't become fun anymore.
Yeah.
And then we don't want that shit to happen. So
we got to keep the balance.
We knew that this week was a Devinism,
mm-hmm.
and Devin just had, I'm speaking to myself in the third person, I just held my son's birthday party. He just turned 6.
Woo!
And so for those of you that have been listening since we started shortly after he turned 1. And
yes.
we had episodes talking about, I had 2 kids in diapers and all that jazz. And mm-hmm. I'm about to have a first and second grader. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah.
So it was his birthday. Mm-hmm. I had to do a party that had 30 children there. So it just was a very busy, very busy weekend.
It was also a super fun party, and like it was one of those parties that's like a kid dream where there was like a phone machine, and there was like a pond to swim in, and it was just like outdoors.
Everyone had a
fabulous.
Great time. Everyone yeah. had a great time. And then also, great. For you moms out there, you would know this feeling. So this week, my children have been gone from the house for 2 nights, which mm-hmm. has never happened. Never happened. We've had a night away from them here and there, but they're with their grandparents for their last 2 nights. And so we are taking their room from a nursery to a 6 and 7-year-old boy's dream room.
Yeah.
So we've also been doing that while they're gone, which means like Devin just can't wrap her head around life. So
they're going to be so psyched. It's going to be so amazing. There's like this huge decal mural type thing. That's
I've got a football field on a mural. And
it's insane.
It's amazing.
It's going to look amazing. It's going to look so good.
Yeah, ugh. I can't. They come home tomorrow afternoon. So I'm looking forward to that. Thursday afternoon, if you guys are listening right away, it'll be really exciting. They know that they're getting a new decorated room because mm-hmm. we asked them what theme and stuff like that. And they were there when we picked out the paint color.
Mm-hmm.
But they know nothing about the decor and what we did to meet their theme.
Exactly. So very exciting.
They each had little requests. So it's been fun. It's been a fun like 36 hours getting it together for them to surprise them.
Buddy.
So thank you all for understanding. I appreciate it. And also, because I'm sure, like, if Kate even had the sanity to whip up an episode really quick, that would mean that we would be, like, delayed on the episode that we're going to talk about today.
Which is super important.
Which we can't really delay.
No.
We have to talk about it. And everyone and their brother is talking about it. So we got to join the club.
Yep. Join in the club. You guys probably already know because you clicked on the episode. But
you clicked on the episode that has a title. But of course, we're in the podcast world and you can't have a med crime show without talking about Lindsay Clancy.
Oh, my goodness.
So unless you've been living under a rock or you just don't watch the news because it gets you down.
Which is fair.
But I would imagine then you're not watching the show, listen, because this right. could get you down.
It so. Really could. This is kind of a bummer.
We talk about a lot of heavy shit.
We really do.
Then I would be very surprised if you have not heard of Lindsay Clancy. So this is a mega trigger warning episode. We are going to be talking about homicide, child homicide, suicide.
This is so awful.
And mental health.
Yep.
So if you really just don't want to hear what we have to say or listen about it, even if you have no idea what it is. But just on those topics, it's probably one of the most heartbreaking topics there
is to
talk about.
It's really bad. This one is really bad.
It's very bad. So,
we care about your mental health. So please, if any of that is even remotely triggering for you or might cause you distress, just like, it's okay to skip an episode. You know, it's not a big deal. We'll catch you next time. Yeah, I mean, this has been, Devin has been all over this for weeks. And I mean, I've listened to the trial is still ongoing and they are live streaming the vast majority of it. So I've been spending a lot of time listening to the testimonies, but Devin has been listening far more than I have.
I either work from home or I'm in my car traveling to a facility. And when I travel, I have hours of travel. So it's been on Bluetooth. Just listening. And I don't think I've ever paid attention to a trial like this. I don't think I've ever listened to one live as it's happening and catching on to those things. There are things that I've paid attention to very closely in the past, but this is the first one that I'm just very invested, very invested. And it's just, it's important. It's devastating. It's absolutely devastating all around. Three beautiful children have lost their lives. That can never be replaced. That is the most heartbreaking part out of all of this.
Mm-hmm. And an entire family has been torn apart and, you know,
and
woman
continuing to be torn apart.
Continuing to be. And, you know, many, many lives have been ruined from this. And it's such an important topic of discussion that we haven't really broached this specifically before. I've thought about it. There've been a couple of things where I've been like, you know, I'd love to talk about this on the show, but this one has just, it's so medical for multiple reasons, and it culminated in this just massive tragedy. And it's just, it's really highlights the shortcomings of mental health as a whole. And, you know, what can happen, like how severe this can be, because I just don't think people talk about it enough, like postpartum psychosis as a whole.
So we obviously don't have an end to the trial yet. So I'm leaving the door open. I initially thought, well, we have plenty for a part one, but I'm leaving the door open that 2 weeks from now, we might do a part two just to see where the trial is going. Or maybe we might do an episode in between and then talk about it in a month from now, if maybe it's done. Do I see it being done in 2 weeks? Doubtful at this rate. I think it's doubtful. Maybe it'll be done, but I doubt we'll have a jury decision. Who knows? But so I definitely think we're going to have a follow-up episode soon.
Yeah.
It may not be the next one, but I think when the trial is closer
to
wrapping
conclusion
up
happens,
or it's been concluded, I think we'll just kind of, you know, do a mini part two or something to just kind of talk about it. But for us, we're going to, obviously, if you have no idea what we're talking about and now we've gotten you intrigued, we're going to get into the details of what happened. But we are going to focus on the previous months leading up to the incident.
All right. We have a Patreon real quick before we dive into the nitty gritty.
Who is this beauty?
This is Rhonda Morrison. Hey, go ahead.
Hey, Rhonda.
Okay, Rhonda. You know what you
Who
are,
you?
Rhonda? You're a wyvern. You know what a wyvern is, Devin?
Not a freaking clue.
Okay. Wyvern are giant winged serpents. They're similar to dragons, like same size, same somewhat idea, but they don't have like a set of arms. Like, you know how dragons have like the legs, the arms, and the wings? The wyvern don't have the arms. They're literally like a snake with one pair of legs and wings.
They don't even have like T-Rex arms?
No. And they're way too cool for that. They're wilder, they're freer, they're more like untamable. And some of them even have venom in addition to being able to breathe fire. So in my opinion, they're actually a little bit cooler than dragons, but I digress. Anyway, Rhonda Morrison, you are a very cool wyvern. There you go.
Welcome, Rhonda.
Yeah,
Rhonda,
buddy.
The wyvern. Welcome. So before we get into the details, I want to preface, if I was one of those 18 members, I literally have no idea.
Oh, okay? God.
I'm going to just tell you that right now. I am completely split down the middle. I do see the things on social media.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to say right now, at this moment, I could probably agree with either side. I could agree with this was premeditated. I can also agree that this was an insanity psychotic episode.
For sure.
I see. So really, I think so who knows? So before, before people start coming at us that we're, you know, incorrect for either side, right? It is definitely one of those hot topics where people are leaning. You know, I do feel like there's one way that I lean a little bit more than the other, especially with some of the recent testimony that's come out that I do want to talk about when we do this tonight. But I truly can see this going either way. And I just don't know. So I'm just letting you know there. Like, before we know, you come at us.
This
so.
Is a very...
She did this.
Emotion- she, oh, she did.
She
There's
did this.
There's no question.
We are not going down the Freda McFadden TikTok trend of trying to investigate the husband.
I was just going to say, this is not a Freda McFadden novel. The TikTok is blowing up with all these crazy wild theories, and it's like, you guys... She has admitted to, we know that she did this. Like, there is physical evidence. She remembers doing this. She did this.
To validate some of that stuff, there are some crazy things that don't make sense that do raise a question. However, it's not going to be like some miracle thing at the end of it that all of a sudden she's innocent and she's out and now they're investigating someone else. That's not happening. I do not see that happening. So I just, you know. But anyway, so to get started with it on some of the details, right? So we're obviously talking about Lindsay Clancy. And Lindsay Clancy was a labor and delivery nurse at Mass General Hospital. So she worked as a nurse for several years, married to her husband, Patrick Clancy. And they had three beautiful children. Their children were Cora. She was born on December 24th. 2017. There's too many sevens.
Christmas Eve baby.
She was a Christmas Eve baby. Dawson, who was born in September of 2019, and Callan, who was born May 26th of 2022.
Cora, Dawson, Callan, right?
Cora, Dawson, and Callan. At the time of their death, Cora had just turned 5, Dawson was 3, and Callan was 8 months old. So it's absolutely tragic. Three children have been murdered. Had this not happened, they would be here today.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no getting around that. There's absolutely no getting around that. And definitely, you know, if this was a premeditated act, you deserve the worst. You deserve the worst sentence.
For sure.
And
for sure.
But that is why our legal system has a jury. And it's up to them in the room who have not been listening to TikTok and social media and listening to the facts in the courtroom and seeing all the evidence will make that determination.
Right. Thank you, Devin.
You're welcome. So before we get into what led up to this, I think we should just get right to the day.
Yeah,
I think we're going to get right to the day and then we're going to talk about what led up to it. So January 24th of 2023 is the day that everything changed for the Clancy family. Earlier in the morning, Lindsay had taken her daughter, Cora, to a pediatric appointment. She had had some accidents at school the day before, which was very unusual. And she was complaining of some stomach pain. So she took her to the doctor to kind of get that checked out. This is important because it does play into effect later on in the evening as Cora needed some medicine. They wanted her to have some Pedialax, which is a laxative. So they needed to pick some up. That's what the doctor recommended to help maybe help her stomach. Right now, this was a typical day. Patrick was working from home. Lindsay took her child to the doctor's. They came home. They built a snowman. There is a picture out there, part of the evidence of the snowman that they built on the day of the murders. And she was sending pictures of the snowmen that were built to family members. So later on, the day goes on as normal. Everybody's having a typical day. And then later on in the evening, you know, this is where things take a turn. Lindsay decided late in the afternoon that she didn't have time to make dinner or to think about dinner, which happens to me all the time. This happens to me like 4 days a week.
So. Yeah.
So she was talking to Patrick about maybe picking up dinner and picking it up while he was out to get the medication that their daughter needed. Right. So 4 o'clock that afternoon, Lindsay was looking. She did search for Kids Miralax on her phone and she was looking at the drive time. So this is where the question of premeditation comes in that we'll get to. So she also searches. They decide to get takeout from a restaurant called 3V that's in Plymouth. And so on her phone, she searched for the 3V restaurant. She calls in to find out how, you know, what they have for the food. And she also on her phone looks to see how long it takes to get there. So they're texting, you know, between 4 and 5 o'clock. They're making their plans for the evening. She's called CVS to make sure that they have the children's Miralax. You know, there's been some discussion about who calls. You just go to the store and you find out or what have you. But also, if I remember correctly, this was the time during COVID. The stores were out of a lot of shit.
That is very true. Very true.
The stores were out of a lot of shit. So she calls the store. They confirm that they have the Miralax. Now an order has been put in for dinner at 3V. So she purchases the order a little bit after 5 o'clock for the takeout order. And she looks up on her phone how long it's going to take for Patrick to get there. And Patrick leaves to go get it out. So at 5:15, Patrick leaves their home in Duxbury to pick up the medication and the takeout food. So, and the times are very important because this is a very short window where this family was destroyed upside down. So Lindsay stayed at home with Cora, Dawson, and Callan. So she sends a text, again, reminder that it's a Pedialax liquid stool softener. There's cell phone records during all of this that show, like, you know, where Patrick was with his cell phone and the text that they have back and forth. So they have some of that. At 5:32, so it's only 17 minutes after he left, Patrick is seen on security cameras that he's inside CVS at aisle 20 looking for the medication. The video shows him spending several minutes in the aisle, and he's seen on video where he appeared to use his cell phone while walking towards the registers. So he called Lindsay, but there was no answer. According to the phone records, at 5:34, within seconds later, Lindsay calls him back. It was a very quick conversation, just double-checking about the medication, like, okay, they don't have this one, but it's this one. Is that the same thing? It's fine.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
So according to her husband, Patrick, this conversation at 5:34 was very quick, 14 seconds, and things sounded completely fine. Nothing was off kilter. So he, you know, we've got timestamps of when he's at the register, all with the stuff on the CD, on the, you know, the cameras and everything.
On the CCTV, yep. Uh-huh.
Correct. He got the laxative for Cora. 5:54, the surveillance video at 3V restaurant shows him entering the restaurant in Plymouth, and they're able to see that he's looking at the takeout counter. He waited there for a few minutes, and he was, you know, flipping on his phone like people do.
Sure.
Okay. So Patrick pays for his dinner. He pays for his dinner, and then he starts to go home. He returns home at 6 o'clock at night, and when he came home, he's like, man, the house is unusually quiet. Things are just seeming off. So he didn't see Lindsay or the kids. He's calling out for them. He doesn't hear anything. In his testimony, he said that he did open the basement door, but he didn't see or hear anything. It was dark, but he just opened the door, didn't hear them, and then he shut the door. He went up to their bedroom, and he found the bedroom door locked. So this was like what got his suspicions raised.
Red flag.
Of like,
what's going
why
on?
Is the door locked? First of all, I have 3 children, 5 and under, and the house is completely silent. That's red flag number one.
Immediately, that's weird.
Correct.
Wrong. Yeah.
So he was able to get his bedroom door unlocked, and coming into the room, he observed blood on the floor and the window was open. So he saw blood on the floor, blood on the doorknob, and he saw his bedroom window open. He didn't go to the bedroom window and look out. He immediately ran outside. So he immediately ran outside.
Because he knew something was wrong. I mean, everything about this feels wrong and you don't know why in the moment, but like, what the fuck is going on? I would have probably done the same thing.
Yeah. So this is where he goes outside to the backyard and he finds Lindsay laying on the ground. There's blood around her. He sees some injuries on her arms into her neck, and she's conscious, barely conscious, but she's definitely injured. He asks, what did you do? And she responded to him that she tried to kill herself by jumping out the window. And this is the point where he calls 911. So at 6:09, he's calling 911, and he calls 911 and starts to tell them what's going on. There is particular verbiage. If you want to look at court documents, you can read the 911 call. I can't read it without crying. So I'm not going to. So you can look it up. We can't hear the 911 call, and I'm absolutely okay with that, because from what I understand, it's probably the most horrifying thing that anyone can hear.
Jesus Christ. This is giving me chills just hearing like the play-by-play of that night. Just thinking about what a brief window of time this was, and how exceedingly normal the interactions that Patrick had with Lindsay leading up to this moment, like throughout the day. And yes, it was known that she was having a lot of disturbing psychiatric issues, which I'm sure we're going to get into like in, you know, days and weeks prior to this. But this is just, oh God, it makes me want to cry and shake. And just, this is awful. This is awful.
I am so far deep down the rabbit hole with it and just so invested in what happens, because I think regardless, whichever way it's going to happen, this is something that's changed how people see the mental health industry, or
100%.
Validates the issues that we have with mental health and everything. So, you know, But it's just awful that it takes this to also bring the, we've always been having conversations about the problems with the mental health world.
Exactly. But
the fact that this brings even more attention as to why, you know, things need to be fixed is just awful.
It's heartbreaking.
You are more than welcome to go find the dictated version of the 911 call if you so wish. I cannot read it. I can't. So some details I am leaving out for you. I have read it once and that was enough. So,
oh my goodness. I don't think I've read it. I don't think I've read it. All I know that is that he had said at one point, she killed the fucking kids. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. That is correct. Yeah. So it's just the way there's the interaction and just, you can sense the way it's written and the words that are said, the way it's dictated, you can sense just what's going on and you can feel the emotion just in reading it. God. So I'm actually very thankful that the judge did the rare thing and did a media ban on the 911 call.
Good.
So, all right. So with that, during the time that he's on with 911, he's calling 911, letting him know that Lindsay tried to kill herself, that she jumped out of the window, that she's hurt. While he's on the 911 call, he asks Lindsay, where are the kids? He says, where are the kids? And she replies, they're in the basement. So he's still on the phone with 911 when he goes into the basement. And this is where he finds all three of his children in the basement, unconscious. They are all unconscious, lying on the floor with exercise bands around their necks. He did attempt to, you know, he was screaming and he screamed the words that you said, you know, while on that with 911, she killed the fucking kids.
He's
screaming this noise that you just don't even realize that a person can make, which again, just I'm not going down the rabbit hole of the husband, but I don't know how you can fake that.
You can't fake that, you guys.
You can't fake that.
You can't fake. I'm sorry. Like the best actors in the world can't fake that shit. Okay. This is so upsetting. And I, you know me, I love true crime and I don't get like truly upset by much, but this is.
So Patrick removes, while he's waiting for first responders, you know, he removes the bands and he's trying to resuscitate his children. The police and the emergency personnel arrive at the scene. The officers locate the first few first responders that arrived, located Lindsay lying on the ground on the left side of the resident. And at this point, Patrick was with her, you know, and he was again saying to her, like, what did you do? He goes back into the house to check on the children with the officers. And then this is obviously when it blows up. The officers see the children in the basement. Patrick is absolutely distraught. And more 911 dispatch calls get put out that this is a lot bigger than just a woman jumped out of a window.
The first responders, the police, fire and EMS, that responded to this residence on that night. Like, I don't know how you recover from this.
Thankfully,
you know?
There are resources out there for them, but this is a day, this is a shift. Even in our nursing world, right? We have shifts that stick with us forever.
You don't forget. You just don't forget. Absolutely.
We have shifts
right.
that stay with us forever. And this
I can
is definitely
think of several.
That.
Absolutely.
There's even so. Those that were in the courtroom heard the 911 call. It was played in the courtroom. The media was not allowed to record it, so those jurors heard it. It's reported that some jurors, they took a break after the 911 calls because some jurors were physically upset and having emotions and having a hard time breathing and keeping themselves together. Mm-hmm. Lindsay herself in the courtroom was distraught.
Of course.
And I've been told, again, just by some reports and conversation, and it's credible reports that they do have resources for court personnel and jurors when they encounter tragic stuff like that and counseling and help them through what you've witnessed and what you've heard. Because I'm not going to let you know the position that my family member is in, but my family member is in the courtroom every single day. I have a family member.
She's got a personal connection to this. Yep.
And they are in the courtroom every single day. And so it's just absolutely devastating. I sent a message to my family member, not expecting a response, just letting them know that I was thinking of them.
Yeah.
Because I knew that they were going to hear and witness some absolutely incredible, awful things. So so here's where we obviously start getting into first response, trying to resuscitate the children, investigation. EMS personnel are trying to revive the children if they can. all of that. It's chaos. It's chaos. It's a madhouse. And it's serious and it's tragic. So the officers in the basement, they locate Cora Clancy, Dawson Clancy, and Callan Clancy. Cora and Callan were lying together and Dawson was in their back office room. So Dawson was not in the same area of the basement as the two other two. Each child is unresponsive and not breathing. They're doing their life-saving measures. Cora and Dawson were transported to Beth Israel Hospital in Plymouth, and Callan was eventually transported to Boston's Children's Hospital. He wasn't transported there right away. He was transported, I believe it was to Beth Israel, but I could be incorrect on that. But we'll get to Callan in just a minute because he's a little bit separate. But he was not at Boston's Children's initially. Lindsay was taken to a Boston hospital. It was South Shore Boston Hospital for treatment of her spinal injuries and her wounds that she had, the wounds that she had on her neck and on her wrists. So this is, you know, they're working on a crime scene, taping everything off, securing the home. And in the evening, so that evening, Cora and Dawson were both pronounced dead at 7:28 p.m. at the Boston hospital that they were at. There was never any signs of life from either of them, and they were pronounced right away at the hospital. They did work on them for about 40 minutes, but you know, to do their best, but nothing came of it. There was no signs of life. At 7 o'clock that night, there's a trooper that's at South Shore Hospital, because at this point they're keeping all eyes on Lindsay and having an officer with her the whole time.
Yep.
So Callan was at the same hospital as his siblings, at the same hospital in a different trauma room. They actually did get a pulse on him. He was able to get a pulse when they're doing their resuscitative measures. So once they had his heart beating, they were on the phone with Boston Children's and they did a medevac to Boston Children's. So Callan, the 8-month-old baby, the smallest of the three, is still alive at this point.
Oh my God,
so he's still alive at this point and he is transported medevac to Boston Children's Hospital. And referring to Callan, I'm just going to skip ahead a little bit because I believe it was January 27th. So this happened, remember I said on January 24th. Callan survived for 3 days before 11:18 a.m. on the 27th, when he died at Boston Children's Hospital from complications of his injuries.
Holy fuck.
That's something so
This is just so heavy. This is one of the heaviest things we have ever covered.
There are no words.
I am like tearing up because that's mom, you know? When you're a kid that age, that's your mom. And you go to mom for everything. Mom is the center of your life when you're that age. And the fear and the confusion and the panic that those kids must have felt in those moments is just indescribable.
Devastating. And, there's no reports on who was first. We don't know who was first. It might be presumed that the baby was last just because he was the only one that they were able to survive.
Right?
And he was immobile.
Yeah.
There's speculation that maybe Dawson was trying to run away, because is that why he was in the other room? The other room that he was in was his dad's office. It was Patrick's office. So was he trying? Like, we don't know, and we may not know, because Lindsay has confessed to doing this, right?
Yes.
But she doesn't remember it. So she has not been able to provide details. So she has confessed to doing it, saying that she did this, but she cannot remember details. So we don't know. We may never know, but there is some speculation. Was it Cora first? And that's why Dawson was he running away? What mom was doing to sister? And the baby was left. I don't know. We won't know.
Ugh,
I can't fathom it at all.
Nope.
So we're getting that day out of the way. I'm describing what happened, because that's what brings us to the rest of what we're talking about. And this was 3.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what has taken a long time to get to trial is, number one, Lindsay and her recovery. She was in the hospital and in rehab for a very long time. We know investigations take a very long time. COVID played a factor into it a little bit, but a lot of it has been Lindsay's health, because she is now paralyzed from her spinal cord injuries. So she cannot move. She cannot use her legs. She will never walk again. She will never, you know, have normal bowel and bladder function. Like, mm-hmm. she is a paraplegic. So she's had to go through her medical stuff and then rehab and then went to a mental facility and all sorts of evaluations on her capacity. Can she participate in this? And so it's taken a very long time to get.
There's a lot.
It's taken a mm-hmm. very long time to get here. So what's rare in this case, is that we don't have a defendant pleading not guilty, I didn't do this. We have a defendant saying, I did this, but I'm not guilty because I was not in control of my body. Massachusetts calls it not criminally responsible. It's commonly known as the insanity defense.
Right, like by reason of insanity.
Correct. Right. Mm-hmm. Which in most cases, you know, it's like a, oh yeah, sure, you're just trying something far-fetched because
this is legitimate.
All the evidence leads to you, right?
Yeah.
And I even first, when I heard about it, I'm like, what? Are you sure? What?
Right, right.
But then leading up to the trial and the pretrial, and I remember the first time messaging you, and I was like, should we touch upon this case? And you were wondering if it was medical enough, right?
Oh, it's medical. Yep. You were like, oh, hell yeah, it is. You got to learn more about it.
Once I said, oh, we're talking about, you know, potential postpartum psychosis here and the potential lack of treatment that there was given to her, right? And I'm saying potential because I want to say all of that is alleged, right?
Everything is alleged.
There's lots.
Yep.
So what we're going to focus on now is what happened before, like what led up to this and what led up to us being like, okay, I have really no idea. Is this insanity defense a last shred of pull or is this legit? Mm-hmm. And I honestly think it's a legit defense. Like this is the one time that I'm actually seeing insanity cases and I'm like, yeah. Now, when you go to the evidence in the jury room and they're going to deliberate, I can see them going either side, but I can see why this is being pursued. So, and this is what we're going to, you know, spend the rest of the time talking about. And a little bit with the trial, but so Callan is born in May 26th of 2022. During that summer, she's going through her, you know, what they call the fourth trimester, right? She's on maternity mm-hmm. leave. They're adjusting to life with three children. Patrick took a little bit of time off. He returns back to work. Lindsay's supposed to go back to work by September, but she's not ready to go back to work. And it's really in the late summer, early fall, when she's really starting to feel her mental status change. Her biggest complaints were not sleeping well, feeling really down and very anxious. It's, you know, her anxiety started to begin initially about returning to work. Like, how is that going to go? I don't know as if I feel ready. I just don't know, you know, how things are coming in that aspect. So this is where she starts to see Jennifer Tufts. So in September of 2022 is her first psychiatric appointment with Jennifer Tufts. And this initially, right away, she goes to see this provider. It's a telehealth appointment. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you right now, every time she sees Dr. Jennifer Tufts, it is telehealth.
Which is not uncommon with psychiatric care these days.
Correct. It's obviously was definitely newer during the COVID days. That's mm-hmm. when people were bringing it about. But certain specialties realized telehealth can still be fine since then, right?
Exactly.
So she goes to see Dr. Jennifer Tufts, and initially right away, Lindsay was prescribed Zoloft. Mm-hmm. Low dose, starting slowly. And she has visits with her. I think it was a total in the testimony, again, just because of time and whatnot. I'm not going to get into every single date. Mm-hmm. I think the first appointment was September 15th, but it's important to note that there was multiple visits, multiple medication changes.
Yes.
And just nothing consistent. Mm-hmm. And I will say the consistency is also due to Lindsay.
For sure. It sounds like, I mean, when I was reading it, it sounded like there were a lot of times where she would like take a med for a couple of days and then stop taking it or take it not as directed and kind of give up on it and reach out and ask to try something else when it's like one of those meds that you really can't do that with, you know, that's not the intended. Am I right in saying
that? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for sure. And that's with a lot of these meds too, right? We know with these types of medications that she's going on, they take weeks to get to a therapeutic effect.
Yeah, it's a cumulative.
You always have to start low and then increase the dose and get mm-hmm. to a therapeutic level. I think Lindsay's anxiety played a part into why she never was on the medications that long.
Yes.
You know, and yeah. a lot of people are placing blame on her for that, like mm-hmm. that she didn't give the medications time to work. I don't place blame on her for that because I think her anxiety at this point was so far into it that she was having a hard time convincing herself, like, give this a chance.
You need to give this a chance. Like, you can't, you don't need to catastrophize.
I've had friends before message me saying that, a psychiatrist or whomever recommended a medication and they don't know what to do because they were too nervous to take it. Right.
Like
I've had friends say that to me.
That's a thing. Absolutely.
I'm too nervous to take this pill that's supposed to help with my anxiety. So she does begin taking Zoloft. She does begin taking Zoloft, but she only takes 7 pills. Mm-hmm. That is confirmed. There was, she only took 7 pills. There were so many left. And you do need to take more than that to get it to a level.
Yes.
But she does report that she's having severe worsening symptoms. So first of all, the Zoloft was prescribed in September, but she did wait a couple weeks before taking it. Again, mm-hmm. I think she was trying to psych herself into it that she could take it. So she really didn't start taking it till mid-October. So then we get to October 20th and she has a follow-up appointment that she reported severe worsening symptoms after taking the Zoloft, including insomnia, depression, mental fog, racing thoughts, paranoia about suicidal thoughts, and fear of being alone. So like I said, she's unraveling. At this point, it's like a mild to moderate unraveling, and then we hit a point where it becomes severe.
I do think too that Zoloft in particular, they tell you during the initiation period, it's the first 2 weeks where if you're going to have an adverse reaction with racing thoughts of suicide, or intrusive, very, very negative or harmful thoughts during that first 2 weeks, that it might be the right thing to do to stop taking it, because that could be considered an adverse reaction to the med. So it may very well have been stopped after 7 pills because that was the consensus.
Yeah. So she does tell her therapist. So she's also, during this time, she's talking to psychiatry. She's meeting with some therapists occasionally. She does want to return to work. She just knows that she's not ready. There was a lot of that, is she getting anxious because she just didn't want to go back to work?
No, she wants to move on with her life, but she can't. She's paralyzed by her anxiety and her depression and insomnia.
So in September, she did tell her husband that she was thinking about starting to take the Zoloft, that she was seeing the psychiatrist. He knew about the first appointment, but then there wasn't really a lot of communication after that. She was kind of dealing with it on her own at that point.
But in
November, she does tell him that her anxiety was increasing and that she's starting to have intrusive thoughts. And some of the intrusive thoughts that, we don't exactly know what the intrusive thoughts were, but that she had feared that something was wrong with her and she was repeating getting the medical assistance and she just had a constant unsettling feeling and tons of lack of sleep. Sleep, mm-hmm. not sleeping was one of the biggest complaints. And some nights it was full insomnia. Some nights it was, I only slept for 2 hours.
Right.
So on November 16th, she does go to the emergency department because of severe insomnia.
Wow.
There's a point in here where she was up for 48 hours straight and she never even was tired.
That's
during
awful.
That. She never even reported fatigue.
Jesus.
November 17th, the day after going to the appointment, Lindsay was seen again by Dr. Jennifer Tufts. The Zoloft was increased. She reportedly was, after only taking it one night, she reportedly was unable to sleep and the medication was again discontinued because it just was not working for her. It's at this point, things that they're just wondering about as they're trying to figure out how to treat her. There's two main providers here that do most of her treatment, which is Dr. Jennifer Tufts, who is a psychiatrist. And then it's a psychiatric nurse practitioner, which is Rebecca Gelada. Rebecca comes a little bit later, but she's was seeing Jennifer Tufts from the beginning. So in November, her mother-in-law, Patrick's mom, recommends this South Shores Perinatal Behavioral Health Program. And she knows the lead director of this program. So she gets her in touch with them and is like, I know the director. She's really good. She's willing to do an intake with you. And that's the director, Julie Paul. This seemed like a really good appointment. They spent 90 minutes with her. They prescribed Prozac. She did report during that visit that she took one marijuana gummy as a trial to try to help sleep. And this was a good appointment. However, Julie Paul did let her know that she's leaving the practice to move back to New Hampshire. So she's like, my clinic is going to take you on, but I can't be your provider.
Right.
So, you know, we definitely want to treat you here, but you need to see you. I'm going to refer you to one of our nurse practitioners. So that's where Rebecca Gelada comes in. So Rebecca Gelada is in. So her first visit with her was November 29th of 2022. So this has been going on for 2 months now. And I really feel like November through the beginning of January, where this spiraling turns into, in my opinion, moderate to severe. Hmm. Like, I think by the time, in my opinion, by the time Rebecca Gelada came in, she's just, I don't want to say too far gone, but like she's, I think she's this is where her anxiety is another level where really like management at home is not, in my opinion, is not the right treatment.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So she begins her treatment with Rebecca Gelada. She diagnoses her with postpartum anxiety and adjustment insomnia and a mood disorder. Mm-hmm. She reported feeling anxious, nervous, or on edge nearly every day during the previous 14 days. She reported difficulty stopping or controlling her worrying almost every day, and being unable to relax. She was not described as irritable, but she was reported being afraid that something bad might happen. She also reported diminished ability to laugh or see the funny side of things, anxiety without apparent reason, little anticipation or enjoyment of things, and feeling scared or panicking without good reason. At this point in time, she is prescribed Seroquel. And initially, when I'm like, I mean, so she's been on several meds at this point. I'm kind of, for time, going through on a broad overview. But I've only mentioned the Zoloft, but she's been prescribed at this point, not all at the same time, but she's had medication changes of Zoloft, Prozac, Ambien, Remeron, Klonopin, Ativan, Seroquel. So, and now we've moved into the antipsychotics. And at first I was like, is this the psychosis?
Right.
Rebecca Gelada did it for sleep. So that's why her reason for it was a low dose. I guess it can be very therapeutic for some people for sleep.
It can for treatment resistant insomnia. It is a thing. Yes. Absolutely. Yep.
So that is the underlying reason. Like when I was first seeing this, I'm like, okay, so someone thought she was psychotic to prescribe an antipsychotic. But so throughout December, she continues to receive treatment. So she's seeing, and really through December, and if you're up to it, pay attention to, was it yesterday? I think it was yesterday's testimony. There's hours of testimony from Rebecca Gelada. And I will say I was impressed. I still had thoughts, but I was impressed.
Yeah, absolutely.
She carried herself very well.
She did. She spoke well. She knew her shit, too. You could tell she really
She
was...
testified a hell of a lot better than Dr. Jennifer Tufts.
Yes.
We'll probably get into Dr. Jennifer Tufts. And I'm going to tell you right now, I can already see us doing a part two because there's just so much to say.
Yes, there's so much.
So there's so much to say. But so she knew her stuff. That doesn't mean that I don't feel like she missed things, Rebecca Gelada, because I do.
Sure.
I do.
Sure.
In my non-nurse practitioner opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So she saw Rebecca Gelada a lot throughout December, but they had a lot of conversations through the MyChart messaging.
Yes, that's right.
And this is the part that really kind of got me. Like, number one, I liked that she had a lot of messages for her because I did feel like Rebecca was very responsive and dedicated to her by getting back to her. I mean, sometimes she was responding to her at 10 o'clock at night.
Right. Yeah.
Other times. But then also on the other hand, I'm like, this is a lot of medication changes and plan changes just basically through a text message. Like, that's my like. This stuff should have been appointments. Like, this stuff should have been, you know, I don't know. That's just my. What do you think from a provider perspective on that aspect?
You mean like the telehealth versus in person?
Even the telehealth. She was recommending plan and treatment changes over the MyChart emails.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. I think that doing that can get very muddy. And I'm not saying I've never changed a medication without seeing a patient based on their report, because that's something that providers just do sometimes. But in a situation like this, where there's just been a clear sort of deterioration of her mental health. And Lindsay is actively seeking assistance and help and doesn't really seem to be amenable or able to tolerate taking a medication or trialing a medication for more than a few days. I think that the in hindsight, which is, of course, always 2020.
Correct.
I don't know that it would have changed the outcome. I don't know if it would have changed the outcome at the end of the day, but it might have given some better insight into, you know, what her presentation was at the moment. And maybe it would have changed a medication decision in that moment. Like, you can't see her body language. You can't hear her tone. You can't hear her speech.
And I want to share with you how frequent this is.
Yes.
How frequent the chats were.
And
with
just
the with the medication changes.
Yeah,
so
in and of itself is
December,
like...
December 5th, December 6th, December 7th, December 9th, December,
wow.
December 12th, December 13th, December 19th, December 20th.
I mean, to me, that would be like, okay, this lady is clearly struggling if she is just constantly messaging for days and days at a time. You know what? Let's put her on the books for later this week. You know what I mean?
And like, she did have appointments in between there. There were appointments in between there, but her messages were so frequent and multiple times a day that I just felt like...
An appointment probably should have been really prioritized for some of those changes, maybe. Who knows?
Now, I will say, in her in Rebecca's defense, her emails to her were great.
Mm-hmm.
They were compassionate. They were understanding. Sometimes she disagreed with Lindsay, like, I don't think we should do that yet. Or
yes.
I really think you should give it a couple more tries. You know, like,
yes.
she was trying, but I don't know. For me, I'm seeing mania in the amount of messages she's sending.
100%.
The doctors kept saying they didn't see any mania. I'm like, to me, that's mania. But
I mean, yeah. Or
I don't know.
I mean, it's hard to say when, you know, we didn't see Lindsay in those moments and we didn't talk
Correct.
To Lindsay in those moments. It could have just been severe anxiety driven.
It could have been.
You know, it sounds like her anxiety, which was probably exacerbated by the profound insomnia and just total lack of sleep, which would make me lose my goddamn mind. It's hard to say for sure. It really is.
Yeah.
This is so
sad. Her husband finally attends one appointment on December 7th with Rebecca Gelada. At this point, he hadn't attended any of her appointments. It was a telephone appointment, but this is one that he did attend to just try to find out, like, what is going on,
yes.
right? What's going on? Find some information because Lindsay is getting worse. December 9th, he also places a call to Rebecca Gelada's office because continues experiencing panic and suicidal ideation. So he's starting to get a little bit more involved at this point. Again, hindsight, I think he could have been a lot more involved still.
Mm-hmm.
However, at least he was showing some signs by that point in time because there wasn't really a lot of his activity in this before. So mid-December, we're now taking Valium and we're up to 200 milligrams of Seroquel. She's worried that she's addicted to Ativan because Ativan's the only thing that helps her sleep. So she was anxious about that she wanted to keep taking it because it's the only thing that helped her sleep, but she was worried about that. So she, at this point, she is being referred. Like, her providers do see that she needs more. She needs a partial hospitalization program. They are recognizing that. This is just where it gets really kind of dicey because she does go to, she contacted the Women and Infants Hospital. This is in Rhode Island. It was a place that was recommended to her. She does go on December 20th and voluntarily enters the Women and Infants Hospital Day program. She reports passive suicidal ideation beginning after starting Seroquel. Now,
so like passive suicidal ideation is different than active suicidal ideation because if passive is like a desire to no longer be here, a desire to die. I want to die. I don't want to be here anymore. But active suicidal ideation is I am going to kill myself and this is my plan. So just for the people that aren't familiar, that is the distinction there.
And that has been a big part
that's
of
important.
The trial.
Yes,
that is a
important.
Big part of the trial because we hear consistently she had no plan. She had no plan.
This woman was incredibly service connected. This woman had a profound mental health issue, reached out for help several times. There were many, many, many cooks in the kitchen, and she was incredibly connected to services. And this outcome still happened to her family, which is just
And I will say, I feel like she got appointments relatively quickly.
Yeah, she did.
I think she got, which is like surprising, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people can't even get appointments to see people or get a referral to a day program or something like that, right?
It's very
like,
difficult.
And she got them. So
sure did.
Like I said, I'm not, there are holes in the system of her care.
Yes.
Would those holes being patched change the outcome? We don't know.
We don't know. Yet,
right?
We don't know.
So now she does go to, like I said, she was at the Women and Infants Hospital, but they concluded that her presentation was more consistent with over-medication and misdiagnosis than postpartum depression. And they determined that the day program was not appropriate for her. So they did not accept her into the program. They felt she was over-medicated. They dealt specifically more with postpartum depression, and they thought she was misdiagnosed.
They kind of did
a little wipe their hands of it and moved on. So that was a day program at the Women and Health and Infants. That was a partial day program hospitalization. Now, December 31st of 2022, she self-admits herself into McLean Hospital. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the better psychiatric facilities in the country.
Good.
And she is admitted to McLean Hospital. She's keeping her journal. She kept journals throughout this entire
thing. That's right. Yes.
So what is also heavily discussed in the trial is that she was there for 5 days over a holiday. So she goes in on December 31st and she leaves, I think it was the 5th. She leaves on January 5th. So she's there. And according to her and her husband, not much happened there. Mm. They're testifying to the fact in their civil lawsuit that it was a skeleton crew, that she didn't have a lot of treatments, that she was there sitting in a room playing Play-Doh.
Yeah.
But during this treatment while being with them, she allegedly expressed concerns about harming herself or her children, and that she expressed the concerns. And this is true. This she had expressed the concern about harming her children to her husband weeks before this happened. That takes a lot of guts, in my opinion. Hello.
Sure does.
To say
that
to your
is,
husband, I'm worried about killing the kid
that
or
is
harming
getting,
the children.
That is getting very very, let's lay it all out on the table. And that is the biggest cry for help, I think, in
so,
this whole thing.
There was a testimony from the psychiatrist from McLean. It was a pretty tough testimony to listen to, partly because she wasn't very well spoken, but she had a lot of answers of things that she could not recall. And it was definitely really tough. I think there's more to come on that. But that so several of the providers that are testifying for the prosecution are part of a civil lawsuit from Lindsay and her ex-husband, Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
Which I do have printed up, but we're probably going to end up getting to that in part 2. So she is discharged. Now, she was discharged after 5 days. There's reports that she asked to be discharged so that she could go to her daughter's birthday party. The providers did feel that she was not unsafe to leave. She wasn't under involuntary admission.
Right. Yeah.
So she had the right to discharge herself. They did not feel it was against medical advice, because if it's against medical advice at a psychiatric facility, they will then try to file to hold you there,
right?
Involuntarily,
yes.
Because it's a safety concern for yourself or others.
Mm-hmm. They did
but
not.
They did
do that.
Not, because again, they felt like it wasn't active suicidal ideation.
Yep.
She goes back to Dr. Jennifer Tufts in January. So at this point, she's gone from Tufts in September, October, November to Gelada in November and December. Mm-hmm. Now she's back to Dr. Tufts again. She's seeing a mental health counselor during the same time. January 12th, she reports persistent depression, no motivation, and desperation for an effective treatment. January 16th, this is a week before the tragedy. She's reporting continued depression, emotional numbness, and forced bonding with the baby. And had a flat affect.
Who's 8 months old at this point?
Correct. On January 13th, she did have another appointment with Dr. Tufts. Mm-hmm. So this is the day before the murders. The recommendation was to increase her amitriptyline. That is another medication that's been introduced at this point. All during these providers in all of the months, have said that she has not shown any signs of psychosis.
I was going to say, no one has diagnosed her at this point with psychosis.
No one has diagnosed her with postpartum psychosis. She has been now only one of the providers testifying has treated anyone with postpartum psychosis, which I believe was Rebecca Gelada. The inpatient psychiatrist at McLean said that they had not seen postpartum psychosis. Dr. Jennifer Tufts had not seen postpartum psychosis. They had all seen postpartum anxiety and depression. However, all of them say that they were screening for the signs and they did not see any.
Because what you look for, yeah, is that what you look for is the intrusive thoughts can be more of a feature of depression, but she at that point had not admitted to seeing things that weren't there, hearing voices that were disembodied or delusions, you know, the classic features. But the intrusive thoughts, you know, again, she didn't detail a lot of what the horrible intrusive thoughts that she documented in her journal were specifically. But I mean, if she didn't admit to the features at the time, then that's what they have to go by too.
Correct.
Just
correct.
To play devil's advocate.
So there's a lot, you know, that we've skipped over in this because there's only so much that you can unpack in an hour long episode. Mm-hmm. I think what we're going to do automatically, I'm going to tell you, we are going to do a part two because we're going to talk about the civil lawsuit, which has not gone to trial yet. Patrick and Lindsay have requested a jury trial. So there's two separate lawsuits. They have not filed it together. They're not married. Mm-hmm. So Lindsay has her own and Patrick has one. Mm-hmm. Both against a slew of providers. Dr. Tufts, Gelada, Dr. Goodhart at McLean, and also the Women and Infants. And I think there's one other one in there as well. So there's at least a group of five of them that are part of the civil lawsuit. We also don't know the end of the trial. And there's a lot to say, I think, and at least opinions on, it's easy for you and I to give opinions on where we see issues with her care. But there are so many medications that we just touched upon.
Yes.
I mean, quickly, yes. We just touched upon Zoloft, Prozac, Trazodone, Remeron, Ambien, Klonopin, Seroquel,
Ativan, Amitriptyline.
Lamotrigine was prescribed for mood stabilizer.
Yeah.
So we're up to 10 at this point, and that's just counting on my fingers with what I just remember when I moved my notes away from my screen.
Yeah.
So, and like I said, part of it is Lindsay's anxiety.
Yes.
But I don't know as if we should blame the patient for not taking the meds when they're just in a state where they can't convince themselves to take the meds.
Yes.
I don't know. It's so hard.
It's so hard. And the system is broken. And the latest update, one of the testimonies that we heard today is that Lindsay reached out to a crisis hotline in the days before.
She called at least twice and said,
I'm having intrusive thoughts. I don't want to be here anymore. And the person that was on the stand, forgive me, I don't remember her name, but she had said that at the time she was demonstrating passive suicidal ideation and that she had no plan. So they could not connect her with any sort of assistance or could not recommend an admission anywhere at that time, which is like, guys, what do we have to get to that point? Like, do we have to wait till it gets that?
Like, I do know that we have to do the plan and all that. Look for that. But at what point does having a plan not matter?
Exactly. At what point does I want to die become a problem? Like, no, I don't want to kill. Like, no, I don't necessarily have a plan. But like,
Because guess what?
I want to die.
When she finally made a plan, she acted upon
it. She acted upon it pretty much immediately, and it annihilated an entire family.
So there's a lot more to say.
We are going to
do a part two. I think it's a lot to digest between going over what happened that day and what has led up to it. I'd like to touch base on the civil lawsuit that's coming up. I'd like to touch base more on the trial. The trial has been very hard to watch.
For sure.
Yeah.
So
we're going to do this. We're going to do this again because there's just
bang this out.
Too much back and forth. It's very important to women's health, mental health.
Yes.
You know,
something's got to change. Clearly.
She had access to, like you said, she had access to everything that a lot of people don't always necessarily get.
Yes.
And it didn't matter.
And she was an RN and she recognized in herself the signs that something was very wrong, and she asked for help. And I mean, she got help, yes, but I don't know. This is just it's the worst possible outcome that could have happened, and it happened, you know?
Correct. Correct. So thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah,
we're gonna
thank you. We're gonna
leave it at that, but we are gonna touch upon it again. If you want to continue listening, you can check us out on Facebook at Med Crimes Podcast.
You can find us on YouTube at Med Crimes Podcast.
Instagram at Med Crimes Podcast.
If you wish to become a Patreon, you can find us at www.patreon.com/medcrimespodcast.
You can send us any emails, crazy stories, episode suggestions at medcrimes@gmail.com.
Stay safe out there. For the love of God, please.
Please. Goodbye.